Episode 131 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded May 3rd, 2017. Choose your own dystopia. Blessed is the fruit, Randy.
In his eye.
In his eye.
Is that right? Is that how you did it?
The eye is watching, Kyle.
Oh my gosh, I didn't study up on my leftovers catchphrases.
Handmaiden's Tale. Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's?
That's Handmaid's Tale.
There's so much crossover. All this dark TV we're watching.
They're all these like depressing futures
with
going
secret
on
societies and like handshakes and weird stuff.
And rampant depression.
Yeah.
Ugh. The future is bleak.
Future is bleak.
I feel like in a way these shows are showing like this alternate reality where like what if like Trump won the presidency?
Yeah, it feels like that. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I know. How crazy would that be?
Oh God.
So that reminds me, I actually watched Full Frontal Samantha Bee this week.
I did, yeah.
Did
I
you?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, this week's was the not the correspondence dinner.
She did the Man in the High Castle though.
And she did a Man in the High Castle where she was roasting Hillary Clinton at her first correspondence dinner. And it made me sad.
Did you see her like tear up?
Yes.
At the end of it too?
Oh.
It was sad.
But there was also the great bit where she was sort of playing out the Handmaid's Tale, where she was coming from the future at Mike Pence's his dinner. Did you see that part? Where she was all dressed up in like gray and basically trying to roast while having to deal with the thought police that had been put in place for her.
Oh no, I missed this
one. Was hilarious.
I probably wouldn't have gotten it as much because I had not watched Handmaid's Tale until just now.
You would have gotten it. It was not subtle.
Okay. Well, hey folks, this week we got we've been doing coverage every week of The Leftovers and Better Call Saul. That's still happening. But we also are adding on American Gods and The Handmaid's Tale. The Handmaid?
The Handmaid's Tale.
That's annoying. They should have made a maiden.
No,
just rolls
the
off the tongue
tale.
A little better.
Isn't that what he's saying when he's like doing Bible verse before he, you know, does other stuff?
The Handmaid's Tale. Nice. The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes. They're not maidens.
I guess.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. No.
Once they do the biz,
yeah.
It's a maid. They're maid women.
They need a titular line. All great shows have the titular line. Like,
don't say that.
All these Handmaiden's Tales.
Anyway, I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
And we are the TV Dudes. And hey, if you guys are listening to this podcast, you like what you hear, there's a couple ways to support us. First off, go to the iTunes store, give us a 5-star rating, write a review, and that'll help us out. We'll read that here on the site. Another way to help us out is to go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. And I'm already shaking my head at Randy because I know he's thinking. He's thinking about third ways. Okay. Anyway, patreon.com/TV Dudes. And yeah, make a per episode pledge. Give us a buck an episode if you're liking what you're hearing. And in exchange, we do bonus exclusive content there. You can listen to us shoot the shit about whatever other topic that doesn't necessarily fit within the TV umbrella. Go ahead, Randy.
Well, do you think there's a third way?
I feel like there must be a third
there
way.
There is a third way. People can promote us.
Yeah.
You know what they can do?
What?
They can sit down and write an old fashioned letter with a quill and pen and ink and pop it in the snail mail, mm-hmm. and send it off and use some calligraphy and just send it really nice. It doesn't actually promote the show, but it makes us feel real nice.
Oh, just send us mail?
Yeah, just mail.
If somebody does that, make sure to take a picture of it and then put it on Instagram. Hashtag
yeah.
TV Dudes Third Way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Snapchat yourself doing it.
I need a wax seal.
Yes.
wax seal. A nice Game of Thrones wax seal. Yeah.
No, I just think.
Delivered by Crow.
I think it'd be nice to get some mail delivered by Crow.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, you know, be sure to tell your friends and post this all over, I don't know, Reddit or Twitter or whatever. That'll help.
Face snap.
I'm just saying, if you're promoting us via mail, maybe do some
jump,
other social
jump,
technology.
Zazzle, MySpace, Friendster, wherever you're
LiveJournal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some of those might have been Bumble, Tinder.
We're really going back in time.
Hinge.
J-Date.
Grindr.
Black People Meet.
Data Farmer. Whatever. Wherever you post. Just promote us.
hey guys, we are also part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
This is a podcasting network about a bunch of TV fanatics. And each month we're promoting different podcasts that are on the network. And it's a brand new month. And this month we are promoting FemTV. This is Melissa Garamonte's podcast where she interviews other women that are in the biz in all sorts of fields. You know, she has actresses and writers and producers
and editors. It's great, and Melissa has a fantastic eye for this kind of thing. She's been doing this a long time. She's probably the most famous person on our network.
And
it's totally worth a listen.
And that is at femtvpodcast.com. You can go to femtvpodcast.com/subscribe and subscribe today. I think there's a new episode coming out next week.
Also, in many ways, since we are the TV dudes, mm-hmm. we have Ashley.
Yeah.
But we're the TV dudes. So FemTV is like the yin to our yang, or the yang to our yin. I'm not sure which one.
I suppose.
Yes.
Although I always felt that way. Dude is androgynous.
Dude is androgynous, yes.
Yeah, because Ashley's definitely a dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you're wrecking my point here, Grant.
Yeah, I just don't want to ostracize our lady dudes.
No, I agree. I'm just trying to say, FemTV and TV dudes, it feels like peanut butter and chocolate.
That fair enough.
Ah, love mixing peanut butter and chocolate.
You made that sound dirty.
But I was going for that.
Yeah, you really... Quit being gross, Kyle. Quit being gross. Hey, guys, if you like us on Facebook and on Twitter, you guys can post questions once a week to us when we put a little question post up. And we'll read that here on the show, which is what we're doing right now. It's listener question time.
Yeah, sometimes if you go to my store site, Rogues Gallery Comics and Games, you'll find it there because I'm a dumbass.
Oh, yeah, you posted it to the wrong site.
This week I posted it to the wrong site, and that's why there was a last-minute one this week.
Yeah. But, hey, our fans rallied, and we got a couple questions in, including a revenge plot update from Nick Thighs.
Yay.
Oh, Thighs.
We still doing that.
That's the last name we're giving you. Did you were there the week that he corrected us.
I'm aware of, yes.
Okay.
Anyway, Nick Thighs from the UGO podcast has a revenge plot update. This is his ongoing revenge plot, Game of Thrones themed. And the update says, sorry for the revenge hiatus, but my roommate woke up from his two broke girls dreamland coma and changed the locks on our apartment. I thought it was another meta joke, but no. Apparently, he's just really mad about being poisoned. Now that I am looking for a new place to stay, are there any great moving episodes of TV I should watch to get me in the mood?
You know, it's funny. The immediate place I go is to a show that's not very good.
Oh.
Friends. Friends had...
Pivot!
What?
That episode?
No, the one where they switch apartments, where Chandler and Joey have a trivia off against Monica and Rachel.
I was thinking about the moving the couch where Ross is stuck saying, pivot,
That's also good, although that's Ross as most annoying.
Wait, I thought you love Friends.
Yes, but it's not a good show. I do like Friends, but it's not a good show. I've come around to this.
Really?
But
I thought it did what it did pretty well.
There's a scene in the opening credits of several seasons where Joey and Chandler are riding majestically in on their dog.
That's right.
And that's from the moving day episode. And that's when we were switching apartments. So I would argue that's one of the strongest moving day episodes. The other one I thought of, also a comedy, there's a Seinfeld episode where Elaine is dating a mover and they're trying to move a couch. And I remember that she has to stop dating him because it turns out he's pro-life.
Ah.
And that was an interesting, fun thing to see addressed in primetime TV.
Kyle, you got any?
Oh, you guys are going to hate me for this answer. Entourage used to have the best moving day episodes.
No, you're right.
Because these guys, they're millionaires, so they got like all these people moving their stuff. And they're like, oh, where's this, you know, a million inch flat screen go? And it's like, not my room. I have the 12 million inch flat screen. And then, you know, it's like, here's a couple hundies for you, you know.
You think he's exaggerating. That's the actual dialogue.
That's the actual dialogue. Where do you think I learned those words from?
Here's like HBO. A couple hundies for you, you know. Turtle straight up says that. It's a drama.
Actually, no lie. A few years ago, a guy was selling me a bike. I was like, how much do you want? And he goes, I'll take a hundy. And for like, I was like, let me think about it. I was like, I don't know how much a hundy is. I had to go ask somebody. I've been saying it ever since.
A hundy is a small Yugoslavian made car, right?
It's probably.
You traded a whole car for that bike? Rip off.
Got the short
Yugoslavian made car.
Fair enough. It was a good deal.
The bike's faster. The bike's faster.
There's a great moving episode of Offices in Mad Men that I really liked.
Oh, yeah.
They're all switching to the new office and the cubicles in there. And it's like a whole different dynamic. They have the different meeting space.
There's also the sort of heisty aspect. Remember when they're sort of sneaking out of one of their offices?
Oh, yeah.
That's a great one. If you count that as moving, which I thought was pretty great.
Oh, my gosh. You guys just reminded me. There was a great office gag on Silicon Valley this week. I know it's not on the slate later. Have you guys seen it yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
With the bathrooms?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh. I guess it's too soon to be spoiling it, but super funny gag.
Yeah. Yep. Ross Brown says, did any of you guys see Netflix's Girl Boss?
I have not, but I believe Les has been watching it, and some of the, it's been on the Slack chat for the Permanent Record Network.
Yeah.
Permanent Record.
And so I believe it is on the slate for later this month or in June.
Okay. And yeah, I haven't been able to check it out yet.
Gosh, it's just too much dark TV. Yeah. This sounds, is this another dark show? Because I can't handle it.
No, it's, I guess I've heard it compared to How to Make It in America. It's a entrepreneurs, millennial entrepreneur kind of thing.
Randy did not put it on my homework assignment, so it did not get watched.
It's on the slate. It's coming up.
Kyle Volte says, hey, TV dudes, are there any canceled shows you love that you regret getting hooked on? Are you trolling Randy with this question, Kyle?
I don't regret us for a second getting hooked on Terriers, though. This thing, the interesting part of this is that last part, because there's not a lot of shows that I regret getting hooked. Like Lights Out, I'm very happy to have watched that one season of Lights Out that existed.
Yeah, I think it's more like you know that the show isn't going anywhere, but you're like, I'll go ahead and check it out. And you're like, why did I do that? I know I'm not getting any more.
I know the squeeze reason he's asking this, it's going to come up in the news, and it's Pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I do kind of regret that one. He's like, oh, I was kind of digging that show.
When I first watched Firefly after so long holding out, and then I get to the end, and it doesn't really have a proper ending, the first season.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Where's the rest? Where's the rest of my episodes? Did it end? Was that the writer's strike season?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, it just ended. It just had a shitty ending or like jumble?
There wasn't an ending. They weren't planning to end it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sucked that it happened. But then we got Serenity, an entire movie, and that movie's great.
Yep.
I love the movie.
Yep.
Do you guys remember the Fox children's show Erie, Indiana?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. They did such a great job with like this universe building. Then they get canceled and have like four throwaway episodes. Where it's just, I feel like I maybe even have talked about this on the podcast before, where I just fell in love with this universe and, you know, setting up all these different like angles and you're expecting characters to come back. And then it's like, nope, we're done. It's like, why did I do that?
You know, there may be a lesson here as I try to think about it that I have less regret for series that I watched that got canceled than I do series that revivals that I regret watching the revival.
Mm.
That may be the thing to worry about is regretting watching. Cancellation may be a blessing in disguise sometimes.
Huh. True. All right. Last question. This one comes to us from Michael Gastini, who says, with quality current shows such as American Gods, Outlander, and Ash vs. Evil Dead, as well as a great backlog that includes Party Down, the masterpiece that is Spartacus, what are your thoughts on the current state of the Starz network? Has it finally progressed past being a punchline of a joke? Will it ever reach the same level as Showtime or HBO?
I'd like to take those in reverse.
Okay.
Will it ever reach the same level as Showtime or HBO? It's possible.
It could hit Showtime level.
Has it finally progressed past being the punchline of a joke? Not enough people know about Starz for you to make a joke about it. They won't understand the joke.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's the sadder part of it. But I do think that they've figured out a better niche for what they're doing. They have a style that I mean, when I watched American Gods, as much as it seems to be upping the ante for like what they're attempting, that as well as Outlander, I still saw the remnants of what Spartacus had established on the network, I guess.
For sure.
And I got the comparison there.
Yep.
But they are getting better and stronger with what they're appealing to, and it's very impressive.
I agree. However, I will say this, I'm only one episode in. Even with American Gods in the mix, I believe Party Down is still the finest thing Starz has produced. Party Down is great.
Yeah, that's
and everyone should watch it.
Actually, that might be a good answer for that first question or that other question about shows that got canceled.
Oh yeah.
Like, why did I fall in love with this?
But we got two seasons.
Yeah. You know, they all moved on to other stuff. Like Adam Scott went on Parks and Rec. And
I feel like Party Down was sacrificed so that the TV gods could create much more television us.
Guilfoyle is on Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not just the actors either, but like the creators. Like that's how we got like iZombie. I don't remember where everybody else went, but like a lot of talent was freed up. That's actually interesting. It's not this question, but somebody was mentioning there was a think piece going around about how Donald Trump basically killed Wonder Falls. You saw this thing, right?
No.
That basically Wonder Falls, this quirky show that was Brian Fuller's show that everybody really loved, it's a great show, was up against The Celebrity Apprentice and just got smashed.
Wow.
And that's what that's basically one of the reasons it got canceled.
He's a powerhouse. He's a powerhouse villain.
And the argument I would make is, yes, it was sad that Wonder Falls went away, and it's sad that Pushing Daisies went away. But without that, we don't get Hannibal, and we don't get American Gods.
Yeah.
And for that matter, I'm sad about Firefly, but without that, we don't get Joss Whedon's Avengers, which is key to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So sometimes, as Spock said, or maybe Kirk said, new life is formed in the shadow of some bullshit that died. I don't know.
That was such a great line. I feel like the writers of Entourage wrote that line.
Can I say one last thing about stars?
Yeah.
I'm going to give like a super serious answer to this question.
Good.
The reason I feel like HBO and Showtime are where they are, and that's you have to take down Showtime, and then you don't take down them both at the same time.
Sure.
But I think the reason they are, great support for their apps, whether it's the television apps or like the online apps, or the mobile apps. Like,
yeah.
It's really easy to watch their stuff, and people, you know, they invest in those subscriptions or even just like getting a parent's password or something. When Starz has the same type of app experience as like HBO and now the Showtime app, I think that's when, you know, they're going to hear people like us talk about it in the media, and then they're going to go check these shows out, and they're going to keep watching on the app.
You don't think the Starz app is pretty solid? I don't have any problems with it.
Actually, they didn't have support for my device until really? American Gods. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I have an older Apple TV.
Oh, I have a new Apple TV.
I want to get a new one.
Guys, it's not a competition.
So guys, we got some news, and we got a big trailer, The Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Marvel's, yeah. Netflix's Defenders. We've been waiting for this for years. This is the big announcement.
Yes. They're
going to do. This is like when the Avengers came together and Joss Whedon did this perfect movie of like all these characters. And so you have Daredevil and you have Jessica Jones, and they're both great. And you have Luke Cage, and yeah, it got a little boring at the end, but it's so great. And all three of them are together, and Misty Knight's in there, and Colleen Wing is in there,
Mystique
is in there, Elektra is in there, and Sigourney Weaver is the bad guy.
Randy,
I mean, this looks, yeah.
You're missing one more person.
Did I miss something?
Iron Fist.
Oh.
Wah.
Yeah, you know how, if you...
Guys. I'm the immortal Iron Fist.
Okay. You know how there was a comedian used to do a bit where you eat a pint of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delicious.
Yeah.
And you get to the bottom and you discover a toenail. And it's just ruined the entire experience. Iron Fist is the toenail in the ice cream with Defenders. Look, I love Iron Fist. And they fucked this character up. And yeah, I mean, they need a little quippy. The Iron Fist in the comics, but you know what they really need? They need Zen.
Like, Zen?
Iron Fist in the comics is not flustered by anything. He's got sort of this Zen attitude.
Mm.
And you can play that in kind of a light goofball, you know, likable guy.
He has uncontrolled rage issues.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I think he's trying to do it. I think he's trying to play the Zen guy who's always sort of like, you know, I'm important. And but he's like, yeah. And then they threw the rage in, and it's just like, it's a terrible version of the character. I don't know how much is the writers and how much is Finn Jones. I believe a lot of it is Finn Jones.
Yeah.
I think he's a big problem. And
I wish they recast him.
I really wish they'd recast. You remember how Ed Norton was the Hulk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember how he's not anymore and we don't care?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are speaking a lot of logic here, but how does it make people feel? Because it's all about... real quick, it was funny. He was the only one in the trailer who had to say what his name was.
Yeah.
Everybody yeah. else, it's kind of like, oh, we get it, but...
And yet it's the most watched Netflix Marvel show. Yeah. So,
because everybody had to record their, I'm going to shit talk that show review, so...
yeah,
to go through and take notes. That's right,
everybody had to record everyone had to talk their talk shit about
have you heard about this? I got to make a podcast.
So, the kind of the cool thing about Defenders, though, is that it does have... Sigourney Weaver looks like a great bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Who's she supposed to be? Have I guessed?
Her name is Vanessa, which is weirdly the name of the Kingpin's wife, but we know it's not her.
Yeah, do we?
Because Kingpin's wife was introduced in Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we saw her.
Yeah. So I don't know who she is. She's clearly like a big boss of the hand. I think she's the original bad guy, which is great because all the Netflix original bad guys have been so good.
Yeah, and they're doing the hand again, who's so interesting.
But the hand is a good threat for the Defenders, for this version of the Defenders. I'm okay
with
that.
It's been the threat for three seasons of Daredevil.
Yeah.
So it's not good anymore.
What I wish the Kingpin had taken over the hand and had brought Bullseye into the action so they could bring that in, because Bullseye's a great bad guy who could take on this group and be sort of the big, scary, physical bad guy.
But shouldn't Daredevil be able to take on Bullseye one-on-one? Isn't that like supposed to be an equivalence?
Yes, but Bullseye is always a guy who gets one-up on Daredevil. He's dangerous to Daredevil.
Yeah, but like then just send Luke Cage after him.
Bullseye back with a bunch of ninjas. Bullseye could throw, like, you know, like they put like straws to throw hurricanes. Hurricane throw a straw through thing. Bullseye could do that. He could throw like a little playing card through Luke Cage. He's going to throw up with precision and force.
Yeah, but Luke Cage, it wouldn't bother him. Luke Cage would be like, okay, whatever, and just keep walking forward and then, like, you know, rip in half or something. I don't know.
I think the hand makes sense. I like that Stick's going to be the guy involved in bringing them together. I loved every second that Kristen Ritter was on the screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's great.
She gets some good lines.
The thing is, the meet cute between Luke Cage and Iron Fist is really important. I am very invested in Power Man and Iron Fist. That needs to be a partnership, and I hated it. It was I didn't care.
Well, I mean, it's hard to gauge in a trailer how like the dialogue's gonna go, because we got a couple action sequences and him going, "Woo, ooh, you," or whatever. Yeah. But you know, I thought it was kind of neat, the punching him in the face, Iron Fist punching Luke Cage in the face, but the fist still doesn't look right. You know?
Yeah.
Is it just me, or before we saw the first trailer for Iron Fist, did you look at that casting and go, oh, this is perfect?
Yes.
Like, they nailed it.
Yeah, because he was good on Game of Thrones, and he looked right.
Yeah, and in my head, I feel like I still see it. Yeah. I'm just like... Just stop what you're doing
and do it
and
right.
Do something totally different.
Do it right. Yeah, I totally agree. Also, I forget how much I like Matt Murdock in Daredevil when he shows up to be Jessica's lawyer.
Yeah,
yeah.
The two of them together, like that's going to be a great team. I love just the little bits we saw of them where they're sort of bantering back and forth. It's going to liven up both those characters and make them both lighter.
Did you see we get a hallway fight?
It's
a mandatory thing apparently in every single show that there's a hallway fight.
This time, team up hallway fight
with an extra wide hallway to make room. What?
Yeah. We just need to see these guys in like Inception, like da da da.
I kind of like the music that they use, the Nirvana "Come As You Are."
Yeah, that song's been in my head all day.
Yeah,
yeah, that was pretty neat.
It's
that.
Slow down, tweaked version.
I don't know. My enthusiasm for Defenders is way, way down because of the Iron Fist show, and I really want to like it. I know it's only 8 episodes, and I think that's a good thing at least.
It's funny because earlier I tweeted like, "Oh great, it's going to be 8 great episodes in a 13 episode package." And I was like, and someone said, "It's only 8 episodes." I'm like, "Well, what was that? Five great episodes?"
But like you said, so this is the team coming together of like production, like everybody is pitching in on it from all the different shows. So that makes me feel good.
Yeah, Scott Buck is not the guy running it, I hope. So that should help.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I don't know. If this come at me before Iron Fist, I think I would have been super psyched for this trailer, and now I'm just kind of nervous about it.
You know how sometimes you need like something to clear your palate, something that might be kind of bland or just not that great? Maybe that's what Iron Fist is.
Iron Fist is
we couldn't have just too much good stuff. We had to get some kind of bland, like our Age of Ultron, clear our palate.
The rest of it's a little bit too bland, too. Yeah. It's like the color palette is so disappointing in these shows, too. It's all dark.
Yeah.
And... dark.
Yeah.
Well, I actually met a guy at South by Southwest who does post-production for television. He actually, his company, not him personally, but they worked on American Gods. Mm-hmm. And looking at how much time it takes to go in and make sure that that Daredevil red pops in there, it's like hours and hours of an entirely, you know, separate team, like, working on that stuff. It takes a lot. You'd think Netflix, though, they would put the extra time into it to really make that color pop and look spectacular.
Yeah.
So, guys, I alluded to this earlier, but Pitch has been canceled at Fox.
I stopped watching after like four episodes.
Same here. I was not a fan of that show.
Flashback to us covering Pitch when you guys both hated and I liked it.
I'll never grow tired of this show. I'm on episode 3. I think y'all love it forever.
I kind of feel bad that like I shit talked the show and it got canceled. I'm like, that wasn't me, right?
I feel like you did that, right?
Yeah. No. If that's a power. If you learned the power. Have the power to cancel TV,
the power.
I would need you to be talking. I'd definitely be talking about some shows.
If I had the power to cancel TV, I'd get in trouble for not canceling enough TV.
That's right.
Guaranteed.
So, the one thing I want to mention about Pitch being canceled, which, by the way, it's a network show. I don't need any more network shows. Fuck it. Whatever. I'm kind of bummed, but I don't really care that much. But I do want to say, in another series of Randy gripes about Screen Rant's terrible writing, The final paragraph of this news story.
Don't read the article.
No, I got to. Once declared as being America's favorite pastime, Pitch unfortunately didn't quite reach to the hearts of his 21st century American audience in quite the same way that might have only a couple of decades ago. Despite supporting an original premise that might have seemed designed to appeal to the socially conscious TV viewer, Fox sadly struck out at the plate.
Yes! Oh,
yes!
Nailed it. Yes! That is a line you go with. They strike out after one season.
Not only can women not play baseball, they can't even play baseball on television. It's tough times to live in.
Speaking of things women can't do, The Handmaid's Tale Season 2 has been ordered by Hulu for 2018.
Sweet.
Yeah. They're getting huge response to this. They have said that basically it is getting the most viewership of any original program currently produced and streamed by Hulu. No surprise there. And
because it's actually good in comparison to every other show they have.
My hand hater's going to hate.
I like casual.
Casual. Yeah. I even kind of like difficult people. It's not as good as casual, but it gets better.
Chance was good.
Oh, Chance was pretty good. What about like the British stuff? Did they just, how did that work?
They call it Hulu Originals, but they're basically just buying it and putting it on American TV.
Because Spy I loved, Whites I loved, Wrong Man's was really good.
Yeah, but that's just British TV that they import. And
so the Path, some people seem to like.
Yeah, The Path. Path.
Yeah.
But I'd forgotten about Chance. Chance is actually legit great. But Handmaid's Tale is far and away better than anything else they've done. And it's going to have a second season, which is great. I assume that will be The Handmaid's Revenge and they will rise up. And
I mean, apparently this is booked for 7 seasons.
Wow.
Well, and that's they haven't renewed it. It's just potentially can go that long because Elizabeth Moss signed on as for her role, but demanded that she also have creative input if she's going to commit to this much.
7 seasons. We're going to kill ourselves by season 4.
Well, if you think about HBO does this with shows. Yeah. You know, AMC does this with shows. Like, if any show on Hulu is going to do it, it's going to be this one.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
If for nothing else, the universe building that they have the potential for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia season 13 has been delayed by a year.
No! Now, this makes sense. We were kind of curious about this because You have Caitlin Olsen doing the Mick, but then there's also all the stories about what's his name?
Charlie Day is doing a bunch of movies.
Dennis Reynolds.
Glenn Howerton has another pilot, and Rob McElhenney is directing the live action adaptation of Minecraft.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Yes,
that's wild.
And DeVito is busy starring in The Prince on Broadway, as well as his own Amazon show.
Our next story,
yeah. So he is doing an Amazon comedy series with Jeff Goldblum, where they're going to be a feuding ex-pair of former music icons.
Yeah, it sounds like something Will Ferrell and one of his cohorts would be doing.
Yeah, Goldblum and DeVito, I'm in. I'm 100% in.
As long as it's not a bunch of man children, like Will Ferrell's stuff.
Cool. It's being created by a longtime producer on The Simpsons, so
sweet. Yeah,
so that's potential. The question is, can either of them find time in their schedule for it? Because they're both really busy guys.
Well, I feel like this is going to be good. Just I could watch both of them just ramble about nothing.
Yeah.
Like they are both just brilliant at talking about just incoherentness.
I feel like comedies are a lot easier for, you know, these kind of actors to shoot. I know DeVito's doing like some stage work, and Goldblum's just signed up to be on the next
Jurassic World.
But come on, they can find time to do this.
Yeah,
and the Amazon model is that you shoot a pilot. That's and then true. You see if it gets greenlit.
That's true. You guys are familiar with the webpage, the same picture of Jeff Goldblum every day, right?
No.
Well,
I can imagine what it's about.
Yeah, if you go to it, you won't be surprised.
All right.
Final news this week. There is a Roseanne revival in the offing here.
Why?
Some people loved Roseanne. My wife loved Roseanne. I think one of our TV dudes loved Roseanne, possibly Les. Somebody loved.
That sounds about right.
Might have.
If it's between Les and.
It might not be Les. It might be another friend of mine.
I can't say I loved it, but I grew up watching a lot of Roseanne. Okay. It was on tons of syndication and reruns when I was younger.
The interesting thing about this is how many people are on board. Like, they're talking to John Goodman, Laurie Metcalf, Johnny Galecki, who's over on Big Bang Theory. I mean, it'd be Sarah a star-studded affair.
It's like on The View or some shit.
It'd be pretty notable if they get put together. Also, apparently, the final season, they won the lottery. There was a...
Didn't John Goodman die?
John Goodman died, I think. There's a big revelation. The entire series was a reality dreamed up by Roseanne the writer. Like, it kind of sounds like the one of these much-hated final seasons.
Okay.
So maybe they're going to, like, do a do-over and do a new final season. But I don't know. I don't care whether there's a Roseanne revival or not, but a lot of people will.
All those wacky episodes. Like, it's like the last season of Seinfeld. Where you do a whole backwards episode and everything else.
I love that episode.
I'm a big John Goodman fan. Like, I tend to, like, steer my ship in his direction when he gets on new stuff. So I'd be excited for that.
That's how you will crash into John Goodman's boat and sink him, sir.
Uh-oh.
His metaphorical boat, sir.
I'm a good sailor.
The shows we're going to discuss in order are going to be Bill Nye, Saves the World.
Bill Saves the World.
And then American Gods. We're going to follow that up with Handmaid's Tale over on Hulu. And then, of course, our end cap of Leftovers and Better Call Saul. But first off, Kyle, you were able to check out Bill Nye's new show over on Netflix. And yeah. Randy and I haven't, so tell us a little bit about it.
I am really liking it. So he comes out the first episode, and he says right off the bat, this is a science show, but it's not for kids. It's for grown-up kids. Essentially, it's the same generation that would have watched his show, you know, 20 years ago. It's for that. Actually, it's for adult audiences.
Yeah.
It's intended to kind of provide, you know, practical, I don't know, examples in science and relate them to, like, you know, what's happening around the world. And it gets off to a slow start. Like, the first couple episodes, you start episode one, and it definitely feels like, all right, we're going to shoot a test episode. Or they did a couple of those, and they just left them in. They're trying to find their bearings and, you know, figure out how the show works. It's really great, like, information, but it does feel a bit forced. After about the fourth episode, though, it really finds its groove. And there's a couple of episodes that I found super insightful. And if anything, each episode, you're going to get some, you know, some in-depth information. So format-wise, it takes cues from a lot of different shows. So Bill Maher, he does this cool thing where he starts at one side of his studio and then expands to, like, a table discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Nye has this incredible studio that the show takes place in that adapts to a bunch of different stuff. So when you first just look at the stage, you see a greenhouse behind you. And the glass in the greenhouse, it's that two-way mirror glass. So you can, like, or not mirror, but, like, fog. Uh-huh. So you, like, hit a switch and it fogs up. Hit a switch and it's clear. So when he stands in front of it, they hit a switch, fogs up, and a projector comes on it. And it projects, like, different segments they have. Takes some cues from something like Vice News, where they go into, like, the different stories.
Mm-hmm.
But then he does bits on the stage. Then the greenhouse opens, and that's his lab, where he's got giant screens back there and like microscopes and flames and like all the toys, all the stuff you remember from Bill Nye the Science Guy. And he brings some comedians in too. Who's the guy who plays Guilfoyle?
Martin Starr.
They do this great bit about the paleo diet and how it's kind of bullshit. And Martin Starr plays a caveman and he's like, trust me, you don't want to eat like me. I just had to eat my baby or something, like all this crazy stuff caveman did. He's like, I just had to run for my life and then beat a snake to death so I didn't starve. Like, why would you want to eat like this? But no, if you're watching it and it's feeling kind of slow, I definitely suggest checking out the episode on the sexual spectrum. Before you finish up, that was just a really insightful episode. I learned a whole lot. And I also learned about how to talk about these issues with, you know, my friends and family, especially the ones who don't share my same point of view. This is going to give you a lot of like cocktail conversation and talking points for your Facebook battles with relatives about
that don't come across as like aggressive or condescending, but exactly. Just kind of like, oh, you know, this is an interesting thing I learned.
Yeah. Or here's another way of looking at it. Just like, here's the other point of view.
I don't have an interest in arguing in a way that is not aggressive and condescending.
This is true.
That is the good way.
It's the only speed I have.
That is the good way, we know.
Well, moving over to Stars.
I saw American Gods, guys. It's really exciting, isn't it? I mean, you guys excited to finally see American Gods?
Like 2 months ago?
Cricket. All right, fuck you guys.
Yeah,
I guess part of me is excited that we can now talk to you about it.
So, finally saw American Gods. I think it's really good. I mean, I love Brian Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first episode is directed by David Slade, who, by the way, is the guy who set the visual tone for Hannibal.
House of Cards.
Oh. But Hannibal particularly because it's Brian Fuller.
What was that, Fincher?
That was David Fincher.
Oh.
David Slade is a guy who did 30 Days of Night.
Okay.
But he set the template
also
for
cool visual style
for Hannibal. And so it's kind of cool to have him here saying, visually, this is pretty impressive. I thought that the lead guy, Shadow Moon, who's I think sort of the newest guy here. Like, we don't really know Ricky Whittle from anything, I don't think, really.
No.
But he holds up well because he's up against Pablo Schreiber as Mad Sweeney.
Oh, gosh.
Who's great. And Ian McShane as Mr. Wednesday, which when I heard that casting and I'd read the book, I knew that that was going to be just a home run. And it is. Every second that Ian McShane is on the screen, I am riveted.
Do we get a Mr. Thursday later in this show?
I don't think so.
Okay. Just curious. But Ricky Whittle came from The 100, which I think is a blind spot for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Oh. So
but he's great. We haven't even seen the whole cast.
No. Oh, many of them, actually.
That was the weird thing about the Q&A after this, is that all these people came out, and you're like, oh, I know these people, but you didn't see them in the episode.
Peter Stormare, Orlando Jones, Kristen Chenoweth, Gillian Anderson, Cloris Leachman, none of them are in this first
episode. Crispin Glover, Glover. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bruce Langley, who I don't know, plays the technical one of the new gods, and he's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so first off, that intro is so powerful, isn't
it? Yeah,
it's these
really good.
These hard-ass Vikings that land in America, and it's just cursed land, and they pray to their god, and they can't get out of there, and it's so everything is terrible. There's no wind. It's just brutal, and it's so gritty looking.
Well, and it sets up what the theme of American Gods really is, which is that gods are capricious and unknowable, and so in order to try and get their attention, they have to do the most heinous shit just to get their attention.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do have some complaints about the show.
Okay.
Ooh.
I found Neil Gaiman a little woo-woo sometimes. Like, I've read Sandman. I've read a lot of his work.
A little what?
Woo-woo. A little bit in love with his prose. A little bit in love with his crazy ideas. And I feel like at the end of an episode of a pilot episode, I should have some idea what the fuck the show is about. And after being halfway through a book, I should have some idea what the fuck the book is about.
Okay.
And I did not have that experience with American Gods.
I've heard that complaint about the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I got from the show is like, it's a visual feast.
Yes.
And the basic premise is that this guy gets out of jail, and yet he must have some sort of ties to being a deity figure in his lineage or something, because he's being courted by other godly type people to join in some sort of war that I'm guessing is coming. And he gets recruited by Mr. Wednesday, played by Ian McShane, to basically be like, hey, be part of my team. We're going up against other people. What yeah. my impression These is that there's going to be the smokers. Old gods versus the new gods.
Yeah, that's generally the vibe I get too. But at no point, Gaiman likes to be really obtuse about his writing.
Oh yeah, nothing's being hand-fed, and in fact, it's being purposely withheld.
Purposely obscure.
Yeah.
And it annoys me from time to time. In general, I'm on board, but it annoys me from time to time. Also, Shadow Moon's a dumb name. I'm just going to say it. Sorry. I understand. That, and they try to have his, like, they hand wave by saying, oh, my mom was a hippie. No, Shadow Moon's a dumb name. Give your characters real names. There's a script in the back of William Goldman's Adventures in Screenwriting in which he has named a character like Climber. And I remember reading that script and thinking, first, this is a really good story. Second, why is your fucking character named Climber? What is wrong with you? Writers do not... I don't want to see your writing on the page. Like, I don't want to see it. I want it to be the underpinnings. But some writers really like to be very writerly. Like, their turn of phrase and that kind of thing. And writers who read stuff love that kind of shit. But the average audience member, I think mostly it's a little too on the nose. And I feel like Gaiman is occasionally too on the nose.
Well, Shadow Moon, it just doesn't seem to fit the guy
yeah.
at all. Like yeah. every time I hear it, I'm like, it's yeah. not you. If yeah. the last name wasn't Moon or the first name wasn't Shadow, maybe.
Yeah, one or the other.
If it was Eric Moon.
Well, this is going to be a great way to call out your friends who aren't watching the show, because you're going to be like, oh, yeah, Shadow Moon. They're going to be like, oh, she's a great character. No.
Yeah. And I also want to say this is the one thing that Stars does pretty well by American Gods.
Mm-hmm.
But all I could think every time I saw that stupid CG blood, or most of the CG effects, really? Was, wow, I wish this was on HBO because it would look a lot better.
I didn't mind the blood.
I thought it was cheesy. I thought that some of the CG.
It's very Spartacus.
For sure.
Hyper macho thing going yeah. on with this show.
In general, I think the show looks really good. Like when they're doing standing sets, the costume works really nice. The character work is really good. But the CG and the tech boys at the end,
mm-hmm.
I was just, I don't know, man. It took me out of the show.
What would you think of the Bilquis scene?
Holy shit.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't that just like such an intense scene?
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Poor Freddy from Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine, we don't have to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's obviously the scene.
When you watch the show, you'll know exactly
You'll know what we're fucking talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a second episode will definitely give us a bigger idea of where yeah. they're going here, because yeah. it seems like a preamble in a way.
And I should say, I have gripes, and I definitely have gripes, but overall I was really impressed with it. I think it's a really good first episode.
Yeah. Well, jumping over to The Handmaid's Tale, like you said earlier, this show is all the rage right now. All the different TV outlets I've been checking out are all talking about it, all the TV critics on Twitter.
Yep.
And it's just, yeah, it's getting a lot of hype.
For good reason.
And I finally went and checked it all out yesterday and today. I caught up on the first four episodes. And wow.
Wow. I was so nervous you weren't going to like this, because I loved it.
I genuinely thought this was a period piece.
Oh,
was
really?
Supposed to take place back in the 1600s.
Oh.
I'm like, I hate period pieces.
I thought I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, see,
but I just came in no expectations.
I have not read the novel. I thought I had, but apparently I haven't. But I knew that it was a dystopia. I knew it was that.
I was just like, I have no interest in another kind
Downton
of...
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey or the Scarlet Letter or whatever the fuck is going on with this. I'm like, yeah, Harlots. I mean, I get there's going to be something really like powerful going on with these characters, but until I started watching the episode and saw a modern day car, I went, wait, I don't know what's going on here.
By the way, one of the things I think they did that was really smart is the flashback sequences, and I gather that's in the original novel as well.
Oh, it's so needed.
But showing us how we got, because the biggest gripe I have about Handmaid's Tale, and it's not really a gripe, is I watch it and I'm not 100% sure I buy it going to this place. Like, I'm like, no one's going to stand up. Like really, they're going to submit to this rather, because it does. It's like fate worse than death kind of stuff.
How can anyone get to this? And this is completely like predicated on this idea that there's like so many evil dudes.
Yeah.
That all would have the same thought process about what kind of evil they should be.
And the worst part is the women who betray other women.
Like, I mean, all of it's worth
that. And the system that they devised to where the women are watching each other.
Yeah, yeah. There's some really interesting shit going on. And I mean, this world exists in the mind of our vice president, I'm sure. But other than that,
right? That's more what I was thinking. I'm like, this isn't Trump. Once Trump's gone, this and is it's Pence. Pence.
Yeah,
this is Pence.
Yeah, but I still like. I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, okay, there's no way. Even though they show like the sassy girl who sort of stands up and then gets like her eye burned out, and you see, you get punished. I get it, but
great
I still
people from Orange Is the New Black popping up in here.
I still didn't think that. I'm like, I don't believe that they wouldn't rise up at this. And then they start showing us these flashbacks of what happened when they were protesting and rising up and that they just got stomped down. And it becomes more and more plausible and more terrifying.
We got to get guns, guys.
And it didn't all happen overnight. It was like piece by piece. Gradual. You know, it started with, you know, the freezing of bank accounts and then, you know, travel bans, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrifying and it's very affecting. I also, the character work here is Yvonne Strahovski playing the barren wife who is so wants a child that she becomes kind toward her handmaid once she's pregnant, but is otherwise so bitter toward
that
her because
was a
she's
dark
having
turn.
Because she's having sex with her husband. I mean,
oh, I thought you were going to talk about something else. Sorry.
No, but I mean, like, that she is so resentful of them.
It's such a back and forth relationship, and you totally get the pain and the weird like situation she's in.
Yeah,
like there's this little scene where she's talking to her husband, played by Joseph Fiennes, who's the commander of the house, and you can see the dynamic between them where she also has no say in anything because she's not treated as an equal partner in their relationship.
Right.
And you would like to think that on the flip side, like where she came from previously, you know, before the collapse of society, that she would also recognize that the privilege of an equal relationship, and it's not there.
Yeah.
You know what the irony of this show was? So if their whole thing is about like having babies and stuff, just go flip over to Bill Nye Saves the World because he talks about like how in vitro treatments are now making it super easy to have tons of healthy blonde babies, whatever you want.
But that's the thing. It's got to be all natural.
Religion,
they're killing
stuff.
All scientists.
Yeah, yeah, their sort of theocratic rule and the, you know, we don't talk about the design, but the design work of it, like the way that all the handmaids look, the way that all the women look, there's this drab lack of color or very similar, very, very one color. You know?
All the prized women are in blue. All the men seem to be in black.
Yep.
All the assistants are in gray, and all the handmaids are in red.
Scarlet.
Yeah. And it all is kind of this consistent, in any dystopian future, it seems like, you got to have everyone wearing their color uniforms.
Right. Well, and then the machine guns are everywhere.
Yeah.
Like they go into what looks like basically a Whole Foods. And there's guys with machine guns at the door. The eyes are scary as hell because they just pull up in these black vans. These guys all dressed in black get out and take you away. You don't know what's going to happen.
It's like Gestapo.
Yeah, it's... Man. And the not knowing what's going... Like, not knowing who's safe to talk to. And that they deliberately keep it so you don't know who's safe to talk to.
Elizabeth Moss is incredible in this.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Alexis Bledel is so great as well.
Yeah.
And... What a heartbreaking story you're getting in the first few episodes for her.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I was encouraged that we're going to see more of her.
And also,
Samira Wiley in the flashbacks brings a much-needed levity to certain scenes because she has such an aggressive realism to how she like talks about like fucked up situations. It's like the voice of the audience going, no, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And we're all like, right? Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because everything else is so bleak in the show.
Well, the second episode has the birth stuff. And I thought that was some of the creepiest stuff. The way all the barren women sort of, they're all basically treating the woman who's not having birth as if she's the one to go. They're all meditating with her and cooing with her. And it's like, they're all experiencing with her. And then all the handmaids are gathered around each other, supporting each other because they're getting no support from they're broodmares. That's all they are to these women.
The overhead shot. I mean, the cinematography is fantastic.
Yeah,
but that overhead
gorgeous,
shot when the one girl gives birth.
Yeah.
And Janine, I think.
Yeah.
And then she starts crying and all the other handmaids like go and lean over and hug her.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't think you've seen the fourth episode.
I have not
but
yet.
But Kyle, you have.
Oh, yeah.
And there's something a little bit, like, jarring to me, and I don't want to, like, try and spoil you on this, Randy.
Yeah.
But it seems to take a little bit of a turn in the relationship a lot of the handmaids have with each other.
Yeah.
Where I think in the first episode, it kind of establishes this, like, really treacherous, backstabby relationship.
Yeah.
And then it kind of flips that a little bit that I'm like, oh, why'd you establish that? They're all snitching on each other behind their backs or whatever in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then you see that other thing, like where all they're all placing the food or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that makes a certain amount of sense, though, because it's a there's a solidarity to them, well, even though they can't as a group, even though they can't trust each other individually.
See, what I wonder is if they're not trying to trick each other, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
I'm
going to
be
too.
All buddy-buddy, and then you're going to tell me your secret so I can go rat you out, because I'm really, like, I love getting raped all the time.
Yeah, and, like, how'd you feel about this? Because you were saying right at the beginning, like, well, this is a lot.
This is really dark. And, oh, my gosh, there's parts of this where I feel like I'm listening to NPR. Because a lot of this is based off of, like, atrocities that are happening all across the globe.
Sure.
Like, in the Middle East and war-torn parts of, like, Africa and the Middle East.
And Russia.
Well, that novel was written a long time ago.
Oh, my gosh. There's, I don't want to spoil it, but, I mean, where I went to art school, we actually gave, what's it called? We kept a girl from getting sent back to her family in Africa because they were going to do this operation on her.
Genital mutilation.
Yeah. Like that.
Yep.
I mean, it's like a common practice today. Like, these things are happening. So that really kind of freaks you out because, yeah, it's dystopian future and, you know, oh, Trump could never do this.
But it happens.
But there's this happening all over the world. And it's really dark.
I mean, yeah, it's dark, but there's a truth behind all of this that I think is important to watch this and go.
Yeah,
there's a line where she's describing, you know, how things evolved, where they took away, they used an attack in DC to strip away the Constitution, mm-hmm. and everything crumbled to authoritarianism.
Yeah.
And you can't help but hear that line,
mm-hmm.
in our current political climate and go, shit.
Yeah.
You know what the one, like, what's it called, conspiracy theorist thing I thought of after watching this show and then, like, hearing, like, James Comey, like, whenever he talks, it's all like, oh, we don't know what's going on. What scares me is, like, the FBI, I'm sure they've got a ton of stuff to worry about. Like, I imagine they don't, like, know as much as they should know about our current situation, you know? Like our current White House situation.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting like, oh, we're looking into it. You know, we also have, like, you know, cartels and, you know, all this other.
They also have
stuff.
Different. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway. But this show just shows you, like, wait a second, who is keeping tabs? Like, maybe nobody's keeping tabs and it's really already started. And we haven't even blinked an eye.
The March scene that turns into sort of a massacre was very disturbing. I don't know. We've all been to some marches in the past few, and it's always in the back of my head.
I mean, I think there's a difference when you're marching for a cause or you're marching against the cops or the power structure directly like that, and they have guns in your face.
Yeah.
And, you know, I haven't been to those.
Yeah, but again, this is another thing where this happens on the other side of the planet.
It's happening, like, all the time,
We see it on the news, and
it doesn't happen. It happens in our cities sometimes.
Well, not where they mow people down with machine guns.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that does happen, like, in, you know, third world countries.
But I also want to call out one person we didn't mention. That's Anne Dowd.
Oh.
Playing Aunt Lydia, the...
From The Leftovers.
From The Leftovers.
Oh, yeah.
Does she ever play someone who's not terrible?
She is terrifying, too.
She was at ATX Fest, and she seemed like a very pleasant woman.
Oh, yeah, adorable.
But she plays awful people.
I mean, Margot Martindale is kind of known for this kind of scary woman role as well.
Yeah.
The scary matriarch in a way.
Can you just imagine being on set, like, could you say, shut the F up, cunt, a little louder next time?
Yep, that one scared me. That one scared me.
Yeah. By the way, I like that you bleep the F.
Yeah, because I'm classy.
Yeah, it's partial.
You can say the C word as long as you put a little British accent to it.
That's how it works.
Yeah,
anyway, can't recommend this enough, guys.
No, so good.
This is amazing. We're going to talk about The Leftovers, and I made a promise. I didn't make a bunch of notes here. I was not going to go off the reservation this week. Even though our character does go off the reservation.
Very much. He goes off everywhere. He goes into all the reservations, actually.
As well, yes.
So this was a weird fucking episode, Grant.
It was.
This is a weird episode.
Wait. What was the title of this episode again? Do you guys remember?
No, I don't remember. I had it written down somewhere, but
naked and pants and stuff.
It's crazy white fella thinking.
Crazy white fella thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't too far off.
Yeah.
This is a weird episode. Like, even my leftover standards is a weird episode.
I mean, I feel like, yeah, it's weird, but I wasn't like. I couldn't not follow it the whole time. I get where it's going.
There were elements I was like, what just happened? Why did that happen? What? And I know what was real and what wasn't sometimes.
Well, what confused you?
Okay, he just runs into a dude dousing his car and himself in gasoline out in the wilderness. What was that about?
Well, in our last episode that we get with Carrie Coons, she's talking about this organization.
Yeah.
That she might go see out here in Australia.
Uh-huh.
That's using an experiment that could transport someone potentially to the other side where everyone disappeared, right?
Okay, yeah.
This guy is saying that there's some group that obviously denied him something that meant everything to him.
Yeah.
Based on the question of, would you kill a baby to cure cancer?
Yeah.
This question of, would you be willing to sacrifice something, an individual, for the greater good?
Yeah.
And I think that was a critical question that would be asked of Nora.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to sacrifice yourself if in the end we could figure out the greater problem of this disappearance?
Right.
So imagine scientists are testing this and adjusting and tweaking and testing this radiation on people.
Yeah.
And it's not working. That's kind of what I got from it. I thought that in a way it was that question was being a tie into whatever's going on with her plot line.
I thought this was a weirdly mystical episode.
Oh yeah, intentionally,
which makes sense. But there was definitely a lot of like, he gets bitten by a snake, he falls unconscious, and he wakes up in some woman's house.
It's very biblical, the trials and tribulations of Kevin Garvey Sr.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, especially my favorite like biblical reference where I was like, I love how you did that there. Where he's like, he goes to see the, the Aboriginal guy about the song. He's like, oh, I want to stop a flood. He goes, you can start with the air conditioner.
Yeah. Yeah. Old Christopher Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And then he falls on him.
Like, it kept going in directions that I did not expect. And it's just a matter of like, great storytelling that it can veer off from. Yeah. Like, you know, you see the beginning of the episode and you're like, I can maybe get this idea that he's going to keep going to the different lines and we're going to see different experiences at each. But instead, he goes on this mystical, epic journey that ends up landing him in that house that we saw at the end of last episode. And so we kind of know where that goes. I like when he calls Matt Jameson on the phone and we get two different points in time where obviously some shit has transpired between them.
Yeah.
And like, he's all like, Matt Jameson's all wet and it seems like distraught.
Yeah.
And he gets that phone call. He's like, you know what? Fuck you, Kevin. So I'm like,
well, it's because threw away his book.
Yeah.
I felt like, I don't know. This episode felt long to me. I kept wondering. I kept looking at the time. It seemed like a lot of him wondering, like, I was kind of in the, okay, I get it, I get what's going on, and maybe my patience just wasn't there, but I definitely felt like this was a longer episode.
You know
who
does episodes like this?
Who's this?
The Walking Dead would do this, where you'd be in the middle of something, and then they just like, hey, we're going to go check up on this guy.
Yeah,
and do a whole episode of, his little one-off adventure.
Like Cuddy, when he's like walking around. Or, I don't remember his name on that show, but.
But I feel like the place where this episode of this story fits in to kind of like the greater series for me is I feel like you have Kevin proper. There's a few Kevins on this episode, but you have Kevin who's going through this very, I don't know if this is real. Like, I can't explain this type thing. Yeah. And like, his faith is constantly being questioned.
Right.
I feel like this is another, like, here's your dad, and he believes what he's doing. Like, he believes it.
Right.
And it's like the more reason for you to not believe that you're special.
Yeah, the one who embraces the path and just kind of lets his faith test him. And he goes, and it's,
who could be totally full of shit. Like, he could just be doing, he could be a crazy person.
It seems like he is in a way.
Yeah, he is.
But I like how the pieces of the puzzle are kind of coming together. Like, you have that reference to his two-week acid trip, and that he wakes up in a hotel room with a burnt mattress. And if you recall, when Kevin Garvey Jr. dies, he goes to the other side of the hotel. An yep. international assassin. He's talking to his dad through the TV screen. Yep. And in the background is he's all dressed up like an Aborigine, and he's got the mattress burning in the background. That's from while he was still in the acid trip. So he was talking to his dad, presumably through that, through subconscious or however this manifests as far as storytelling for us.
I think was Kevin contacting him. Not the other way around, and that the dad is actually
Junior was contacting.
Yeah, Junior was contacting Senior, and Senior's just legitimately crazy. He's tripping on acid.
I like this idea that we get this reveal that Senior has like a chip on his shoulder about his son. That like he's the one who's being deified in the book of Kevin, and so he like rips up and abandons the book, the only remaining copy, I guess. And yeah, I don't know. I mean. I could go on about what I think is interesting.
I miss Carrie Coon. I need a little more Carrie Coon in my leftovers. I missed all the regular characters. Like, it was a weird departure, and I was into it, but I feel like I could have used a little bit of a B story here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's fair. You're wrong, but that's fair.
Well, no, I feel like. With Walking Dead, like when they started doing this more often is when the show started slowing down for me and more of my friends were like, hey, I'm dropping out.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, they only have one other season, so it's not like people are going to drop
off. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to watch the whole show.
I mean, Kyle, I'm going to have to insist you never compare this show to Walking Dead. That's dick writing, and this is top of the show.
You know when you dress up like the sheriff from Stranger Things and they ask you if you're the sheriff from The Leftovers or the sheriff from Walking Dead?
Anyway, we'll move on from this. Maybe I'll have to do some sign-ups. But let's wrap up by talking about this week's Better Call Saul.
Better Call Gus.
Better Call Gus.
So, remember when the original pitch for this was like, it was going to be like a half-hour comedy? You remember? Like, that was originally... And I can't even imagine, because this show, this has become such a component of Breaking Bad at this point. Like, answers to questions I never thought we'd see answered, like... We're gonna see how Tio has his stroke.
Oh yeah,
we're for sure gonna see that. That's... And I think that Gus is involved in it somehow. We're gonna see what leads up to Gus getting his partner killed. Which, by the way, we more or less have confirmed that the two of them were lovers, which was sort of a pretty heavily implied thing.
I think that was known in the.
Was it known? It was very heavily implied, but I don't think it was ever actually said. It could have been
more really like good. The Butt Brothers.
Yes, we see why. What am I blanking on? Don Ilario, the other Don Hector. But, we see why Don Hector hated Gus so much because Gus was so much better at this job than he was.
Yeah.
And Gus is a thinker and a planner, and Hector's the thug.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see the birth of this rivalry that's going to lead up to Hector's vengeance. For something that probably Gus did to him. And we see how Mike becomes sort of indispensable to both Gus and Saul separately in different ways.
Yeah.
Like, that's fascinating. Like, all this, there's like no Saul in this for a while.
Yeah, I was like, are they even going to touch on Kim and Saul? Or?
And so I was totally okay with that. Kim and Jimmy. I love seeing Don Ilario again. I love seeing that whole thing. I love all the callbacks.
That was a long intro. Yeah. That cold open was, I want to say, like 12 minutes.
Yeah. But basically when he's comparing him, Don Ilario's, you know, breaking balls and basically saying that Gus is a bigger dick than you because he's got more money. And I'm just like, basically he started the whole thing. And then they've got that scene in the restaurant that's really tense and really interesting. And that was all really good. And then we got the Jimmy and Kim and Mike. No, what's his brother's name? Howard. Howard and
Chuck.
All that stuff with the arbitration.
Yeah.
And okay. Are you guys on board with me at this point that Chuck's the asshole? Are we all on board this?
Oh, yeah.
Because what a pedantic asshole.
I feel like...
Yeah, I mean, they really laid it on thick with the pettiness of, like, no, we need you to say destroyed.
Yeah.
We need the extra $2.50 for the cassette tape. It was... And I may need an apology to the face or whatever. I mean,
Arbiter or Chuck whatever. Chuck has won, and he is in no way being the bigger man. He is being the smaller man in every possible way.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait to see what way Kim and Jimmy have come up to fuck him, because I know there's a plan.
I mean, I think we saw it in, I don't know if it was, I think it was the previous episode. We saw it when he said, like, no, here's what's going to happen, Chuck, is something's going to happen to you and nobody's going to be here to help you.
Yeah.
Like, you did this to yourself.
You think that Mike's going to whack him?
No, I think he's literally like, he's going to have just this, he's going to be stuck out there by himself. His partners at the law firm are going to screw him out of whatever he has.
Yeah.
And then he's just going to die alone, a crazy guy in a tinfoil hat.
Yeah, maybe so.
I mean, what do you think was the plan? We get little glimpses. Yeah. Like Mike breaks into the house, or he poses as a door repairman, and he takes pictures, and we get the hint that Jimmy was looking specifically for evidence of his brother's impairment and how he's a little nuts about it.
And Kim gets him to admit that they have a copy of the tape. And she says, bingos, like, that's clear. I can't figure out what the plan is. Huh. And I love that. I'm not sure what the plan is. I know that it involves probably erasing the tape so that when he plays it at the disbarment hearing, that there's nothing there. And maybe they're going to try and prove that he's crazy.
Mm.
Maybe they're going to try and prove that he's a whack job and there was never any tape.
But, I mean, they would have to who else heard the tape?
Wait a second.
Howard heard it.
Did Howard hear the tape?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he said there's nothing we can use on this.
Question.
Oh, right.
Have they said anything on the show to implicate that Jimmy would, if like Chuck was incapacitated, that Jimmy would become like
his guardian?
Yeah, his guardian.
I think it's possible.
Huh. Because then he'd have access to, you know, whatever he has invested in the firm.
Yeah.
Like, in some way, commit him to the point where...
I mean, he's been the guy in charge of committing him before, and he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really fascinated to see what the plan is. I love that Kim has been the angel on his shoulder for a long time, and I both love and hate how badly he's corrupted her.
I mean, at the point where she's calling all those places and then canceling appointments, it seems like she's joining the dark side a bit more now.
She's in at this point. Her ethics have gone out the window just like Jimmy's.
Yeah.
Well, and you know something I love about all the seasons of the show is they show how, like, not only just Jimmy becoming Saul, like, all the drama, but, like, how he turns into, you know, this guy who... like talks with old people and is just got like a very great like common tongue. Like you can stick him in any situation and he'll just like sleaze his way into the conversation and get somebody to, you know, give him a dime. Yeah. Like you see him build that skill, like with the new office and just, you know, like every interaction he has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is so good.
It's
good.
I don't know where it's going to go, but they left it on a good cliffhanger this week. I mean, it's not like a Breaking Bad cliffhanger where you're like, holy shit, they just blew up everything. What's going to happen?
But I want to know what they're doing.
It's
more
like,
is
there a secret tape? Yeah. it's a softer.
We're in that golden age of TV again right now, guys, because it's like this, Fargo, Handmaid's Tale, Leftovers. Like we're in beautiful American Gods, Silicon Valley, Veep.
Big Bang Theory.
Shut the fuck up, Brent.
There's so many.
John Oliver, Matthew B.
We're in peak TV of peak TV right now.
That's right. All right, but we are going to stop right there because we have to get back to watching all this TV. We got so much homework to do.
So much TV.
all right. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, Grant.
Thanks, listeners. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.